And now for something completely different.
Smoke medical weed every day.
The following thoughts on Hoffy Hour represent Ryan Hoffy and Pastit. Listener discretion is advised.
Live from Tampa Bay, you are tuned in to Hoppy Hour.
He's the voice of a generation that got screwed by the baby boomers. Welcome back to Hoppy Hour.
Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour. Hoppy Hour starts in 4, 3, 2, Hoppy, Hoppy, Hoppy. This is Hoppy Hour with Hoppy.
What's up? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and I've known this guy for a decade now, and I've been a listener for just as long. From the nationally syndicated Woody Show, the one and only Woody is on Hoppy Hour. What's up, bro?
Have I known you for 10 years?
It was right when you began at Alt 98.7. I remember you followed me back on Twitter because it was right after. I remember where I was. I was at the pool and I was tweeting all the radio shows I liked. I said, "What do you think about Anthony from Opie and Anthony getting fired? Hashtag fake outrage or something like that." And I tweeted at you. That was when you first began at Alt 98.7, and then you added me back. And then we've gotten, I drink more than you at the morning show boot camps, but we've partied at boot camps. So yeah, it's been a decade.
Well, I mean, interesting flex on the drinking. Dude, you're like four times the size of anybody else there. So,
well, I don't really drink as much anymore because once I turn 30 this year, the hangovers, bro, it's not worth it.
Hoppy 30. Wow. Okay.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So what you been up to? I know you host a very popular show each day. How's that going? I mean, I know you're getting up. What time do you get up? Like 1:30 a.m.-ish?
2. We're getting up at 2 these days. at work by like 2:45. Show goes on at 3 for the East Coast stations, syndicating west to east. And then we're there until about 11, maybe 11:30.
How do you guys... Long day. Yeah, how do you guys... do such a good job of sounding like it's not 3 a.m. because like I've done plenty of morning radio in my life and getting up at 4:45 feels early, but I've done 2 a.m. a few times. I have such respect for the schedule you guys have because you guys sound very awake where it's 3 a.m.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the difference is I think, I've argued this with different people. I think at that time of the day, it's all just a variation of the same thing. You know, what's the difference between 3 and 4 a.m.? I think 5 a.m., like if you get up at 5, yeah, that's early, but it's still really kind of considered the morning. Anything before that, you wake up in the middle of the night. So I don't, to me, and I've done all of them, depending on, you know, being syndicated, being not syndicated, having to get up earlier, maybe a little bit later. And to me, it doesn't feel any different. 2 o'clock doesn't feel any different than when I got up at 1 o'clock. It doesn't feel any different than I got up at 4 o'clock. It's all just kind of a version of the same thing.
Did you ever do overnights?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I've done every, well, you know what? I've never done middays. I never did middays, but I've done every other shift, whether it's like, you know, the 10 to 2 late nights to overnights, you know, obviously mornings, afternoon drive, weekend swing. I was like a full-time weekend swing person for a while. Just never middays, which is, God, if the pay was better, that'd be the best shift on earth. Don't got to be there too early. You're not there too late.
There's not that many midday hosts anymore. It seems like it's all voice tracked now.
Yeah, I mean, probably where it's going. You know, if people are still music jocks, I don't know what the shelf life on that is going forward. You know, it's definitely going to be more content and personality. Based on all the conversations that I hear and the moves that I see. I mean, you can see more and more afternoon shows, multiple person afternoon shows. We got one here in LA at Alt 98.7 with Booker and Stryker. They've got one at Q102 in Philly, Z100 in New York. I mean, they're trying these afternoon shows, and I think it's obviously just more of the content movement.
You had a legendary afternoon show in Chicago. I remember listening to it maybe once or twice because I was very young, but what was that like working at Q101?
That was probably one of the worst. I mean, it started off great, but then ended up being like one of the worst experiences because
why?
Man Cow was the morning show.
Man Cow.
One of the nicest guys to your face, but one of the biggest pricks behind your back. You know, and Yeah, so, you know, you kind of quickly figured that out. But, like, that's the thing. Is like, he was his own kind of world. And so the station after ManCal, like, they couldn't control anybody on the morning show. So everybody got it from 10 a.m. through midnight. So, you know, Sludge, Brian, who's now at mornings at Q101, he was the midday guy. We were doing afternoons. And the station was just in constant flux with the format, changing directions. Today we're, you know, targeting women 18 to 34. And then the next day it's, you know, 35 to 44, you know, men, you know, and then we're going, you know, from playing all Slipknot and Disturbed and everything else to playing Death Cab for Cutie and Coldplay. It was just kind of all over the place. And so that got frustrating, and having a content afternoon show, at least that's what it was supposed to be. You know, we're just getting hammered on by song counts and why didn't you play X number of songs this hour, and you add that up with all the commercial breaks, and it's like, well, there's only 60 minutes in an hour. So it was just a lot of fighting, and I've never been good, even early in my career, of being kind of under the thumb. I just don't work. So it wasn't enjoyable. In fact, when we ended up getting fired, which was interesting, how that all happened, I remember Tony, who was one of the guys on my show, Tony Mott, and I, we literally were like skipping down the hall. We were so psyched that whole thing was over, and plus we were also getting paid out like the next 4 months, so we basically had a 4 month paid vacation. But it was just good to be out from underneath that. No bad people there. It's just a really weird time in the history of the station, and then going to San Francisco, where we, you know, met Greg and Menace, who are on my show to this day.
It's funny, I grew up listening to ManCow, but I've heard nothing but bad things about him. And my thing is, I notice all the people that are nice to people, you, BJ Shea, Rick Rumble, Abe Cannon, all these guys that are my radio friends that are nice people have longevity. It seems like in the 90s, it was cool to be a douchebag, but I feel like within the last 10 to 15 years, that act wore off. Would you agree?
Well, I mean, it's one thing on the air. I mean, everything on the air is, you know, the show. You know, that's the show part of things. And, you know, I've never really understood, you know, I guess I can't say that. Like, earlier in the, like, obviously late 90s, like the radio wars, that was kind of a bigger thing. And I definitely, you know, would partake in some of that because, you know, I do like, you know, I do like the strategy. I do like the getting under the skin part, even doing things intentionally that, you know, will just, even if it's not obvious, you know, on the air to your audience, but you know that other shows or other stations are paying attention, just doing stupid little things just to get under the skin of the competition, like that mental warfare. Like, I do enjoy that, but that's the show. You know, that's just kind of what we're doing. But, you know, when the microphones are off and everybody's hanging out, like a boot camp kind of thing, like when everybody's just there or any kind of other radio convention, like we're all just radio dorks, we're all just radio geeks, like we all do the same thing, we're all on the same, you know, team that way. Like, the industry is a smaller and smaller team by the day. But, you know, I've never understood why that stuff carries over into off the air. You know, it's never, like, even the stuff that I would engage in, it was never personal. You know, it was just, you know, talking smack about the other station. And, you know, that stuff was kind of fun. And now it's a little bit harder because, you know, there's two companies. All the radio stations in town are basically in two different buildings. That's it. So it's a little bit more difficult. But yeah, this whole like starting wars and stuff, I've never been all that into. And especially now, it's like, I don't have time for it, man. Like, this is my job and this is what I do. But I don't carry any kind of like radio beef or hatred. There's one person in the industry who could die tomorrow and I wouldn't care, or who would get fired tomorrow and I wouldn't care. And that person knows who they are. Other than that, everybody else, man, like, is cool. Like, I'm down to have a beer with anybody. And, you know, just had a great, you know, chance meeting. Have you ever heard of the show Mark and Brian?
Yeah.
Okay. Talk about like legends in the morning show radio game, Hall of Famers. Mark and Brian, you know, kicked ass in LA for 27 years. And, he wrote a book. Mark Thompson of Mark and Brian wrote a book, and it's called Don't Bump the Record Kid. Any radio person, I recommend, it was recommended to me by Eric Rowe, who produces for KRBE in Houston. He called me after reading this book on a cruise, and he's like, you've got to read this book. I also recommend the audio book because I think anybody who tells stories and uses their voice, and, you know, is a voiceover artist of any kind, you should get their book because they tell the story better than anybody. And so you get to hear it in their voice, which I think makes even a bigger difference. I hit him up because I have some friends who know Mark, and I just reached out to him to say, hey, man, the book is great. I'm just started it or whatever. And we actually got a chance to meet and get together. And we spent hours just talking about stuff, and it was awesome. Now he's definitely, like, he's a mentor to me because he's done all this stuff. He's lived all the same things that I'm going through now. You know, being in LA now for 10 years, he was in LA for 27 years, and, you know, being able to bounce those kind of things off of him. So that's the kind of stuff I think is really valuable. I talked to BJ Shea. He's got a new job.
Yeah.
He's trying to navigate iHeart, a company that I've been with now for 10 years. So anyway, it's just, you know, that's the kind of stuff that is way more valuable than trying to talk smack or start wars or carry on any kind of hatred. Because I think as things go on and go forward, especially as things get smaller, like, your paths will cross at some point in some way. So, you know, why be a dick, you know, when, you know, everybody just has to get along.
And you taught me two things at Morning Show Boot Camps. The first one was the website. I think it was Tweet Cleaner, where you clean out tweets.
Tweet Deleter, yeah.
Yeah, I used that and saw a lot of tweets from high school that you saved my ass with that. But I'm not sure people would have looked for my tweets in the past anyway. But the other thing you taught me, whenever, like, in 2015 or 2016, I'd be getting into arguments with people that I worked with at the Bone, you were saying that, like, when people would get into a war with you, that you never really said their name because they were saying your name. And there were shows in the past that tried to have a war with you on air and you shut it down. And I've always emulated that. Whenever I'll have a radio show in Tampa talk shit about me, I go, like, you're saying my name, bro.
Yeah. When, like, and the difference is, I mean, I understand, like, if you're in a position and you're fighting, like, you know, it's not so much of a big deal. But, like, when you're on top, you know, and you have the larger audience and you have the loyal audience and whatever, like, why are you, like, there, you see so much clickbait. It's basically radio clickbait, right? So they're just trying to get their name, that's all it is. I don't think there's any, like, real true beef there, unless it's kind of rooted in some kind of, like, envy or jealousy of some kind or whatever. But they're just doing it to hype up their audience. But at the same time, it doesn't benefit me at all. If I'm sitting there and I'm number one in the market, you know, why am I mentioning the show that's, like, 13 places, 20 places, however, like, anybody who's below you, two and down, you know, why do that? It doesn't make any sense. Also, you better be pretty clear, you know, because if you do mention somebody or whatever, I mean, we all talk about how radio people, we're influencers. We talk about a show we like, someone's going to check it out. We talk about a restaurant we like, somebody might go and try it. You know, so if we're mentioning some other show, people go, oh, what's that? You probably just brought awareness. And if you know, you better really know that person or that show that you're mentioning, because, like, do you want to send? There's plenty of shows. Like, I had no problem mentioning in the past where it's like, dude, I know if my people go over there, if they stick around for that, there's nothing I can do, you know, because I just don't see it being a very good show. But that's why you just don't get involved with it at all in the first place. Just stay away from all of it, because you are risking. And you know how with meters and how the ratings work. And now it's like one person, there's one meter that can completely take a station from 15th place to, I've seen it, to first place with one meter. It's crazy, especially when you get into the younger demos. One meter can make a huge difference, because, you know, that's just the way it works now.
What has been the biggest difference in your show from when it was just writing down the ratings to now with PPM? What's the biggest approach you have changed?
I didn't really change anything. When PPM first came in, you know, everybody's talking about keep things 15 seconds, and they had all these rules for PPM. People who had not even dealt with it yet, because it was new for everybody. Everybody was all of a sudden an expert. And I kind of figured, like, well, we don't need to mention the name of the show or mention the name of the station, because the media will pick it up. But it still comes down to doing compelling things, inciting some kind of, like, passionate response, whether it's anger, sadness, happiness, you know, whatever that emotion is, like, just, you don't want to be kind of a 5 out of 10. So whatever it is, if people are going to be pissed, great, that wins. If people are going to be psyched, that's great. If they're going to be super mad, that's great. Whatever it is, that stuff is what matters. And also just keeping, I think, the PPM thing, because it is, you know, something that's not just recall. It really relies on people being tuned in. So keeping things moving forward, keeping things, don't get too stuck on one particular thing for any amount of time. Like, just move on to the next thing, because you're going to lose if it's not hitting. If it's hitting, it's great, you know, but if it's not hitting, you're losing people. And so it's just a matter of, like, you can't be lazy. I think, you know, back in the day when people were writing things down, it was just all based on recall. So you could do one big bit, you know, the guy in Chicago, I forget, Steve Dahl, could do a disco demolition, and he could live on that for years. Yeah, I like Steve Dahl, disco demolition. They remember the one Mancow back in San Francisco, Bay Bridge for a haircut. Oh yeah, Mancow got a haircut on the bridge. Cool. And that would have been great for that day and got people tuned in for the next couple of days. But if you didn't keep consistently delivering and giving people, you know, some kind of interesting something that's like, you know, that's cool, or something, you know, engaging in some way, shape, or form, something that people can interact with, you're going to lose them and people aren't going to stick around.
It's funny with disco demolition. I heard about it all the time growing up. And when I was growing up in the 90s, it was beloved. And now with cancel culture, I don't even know what to make of it, because I didn't go to it. But all these Gen Z podcasters are trying to say that Dahl was racist. And I'm like, I interned for the guy. He's not the friendliest man, but he is not racist. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, who cares? I say that people, you know, that's a question that comes up a lot about, you know, well, you say this or you say that, and people are going to think this. People are going to think whatever they want to think. And they'll even think it based on something that you didn't even say. They'll take what you said and they'll imagine it a different way. They'll apply a different context or take it completely out of context altogether. And so, you know, I've just maintained, I'm not apologizing. I said what I mean. I mean what I said. If I'm going to apologize, it's going to be something I go, you know what, I was thinking about this more, and I got a different perspective on this now. But, you know, if people want to call me a racist, a misogynist, a homophobe, transphobe, whatever it is, I don't care what it is, you are free to label me as such if what you're basing that on is something that I've actually said or actually did. Because some people will take something super small and turn it into, that's racist. Well, I don't really see how that's racist, but if that's what it means to you, who am I to argue? That's fine. I guess I am a racist, you know, like, because you're not going to win the argument. You're not going to convince them otherwise, and you're going to spend all your time trying to convince people of you're this or you're not that, as opposed to just, you know, trudging along and just being who you are.
And what I've learned too is that if you respond to people on Twitter that say that, you make a bigger thing out of it than if you just give it a heart and just be kind of passive aggressive and ignore it. Like, whenever I get a rude comment, I used to like go to war with people, but I realized that I'm giving them what they want. They're losers. And everybody says they're losers in a basement or whatever. They could be at a 9-to-5 job. It's not all nerds in basements, but there's something about the anonymous account. Like, we're putting our lives out there. They're anonymous, so it's easy for them to say that. And I've learned as I've gotten older that, like, it doesn't really matter. I used to always want to, like, prove them wrong, Woody, but now I don't really care.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. And who cares? And the other thing is, like, you know, like, how, you know, I always say everything is content, right? Radio people say it all the time. Everything is content, no matter what happens. Getting gas has become content. People sending these things has become content. So, you know, we have a bit that we do. We just did one the other day. We call it the crossroads, where it's like we just take things that people have sent to the station, complaints to the station email, or complaints on our Facebook or whatever, and we read them, and we're basically firing that person. Like, look, it's better for you. You know, nobody wants to turn the punch bowl at the party. You know, so you are no longer allowed to listen. Like, take care. Meet you at the crossroads. There's an old Bone Thugs and Harmony song that
we have
a clip of, and people love it, because, like, you're acknowledging it. You're not hiding from whatever it is that they're complaining about that they think is going to be, you know, the end of you, that they're going to burn you to the ground with. And you know, and the list of the people who do like you, and, you know, the people who are listening, they love it. And so, you know, it's defending yourself without defending yourself. You're just kind of turning the mirror around, like, look how stupid you sound. You know, this is what you're complaining about, and 90% of the time it's something, like I mentioned, out of context, or it's embellished in some way, shape, or form.
Now, when
so
I
you can't worry about it.
When I worked for Rover, we weren't allowed to talk to him during the commercial break because his whole thing was save it for the air, save it for the air. What is your commercial break process like? Do you guys talk once, or do you guys talk to each other, or do you kind of like save it for the air?
No, I mean, it's not because there's any kind of rule. It's just that there's so much going on. You know, if we saved everything for after the show, as far as the stuff that we needed to get done, we wouldn't be out of there till, you know, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. So during all the commercial breaks and, you know, before we rejoin our network, there's usually a song that plays locally on the LA station. So during that time, if we're not doing some of the local stuff, you know, for LA, we're already getting a jump start on stuff that we need, like liners or spots or anything else that we need to record for our other markets, getting things ready for the next day. So we use all that extra time. We're not really talking about, we already have a plan set up. We're not doing things moment by moment. Like, we know what the plan is. Now, if something comes up and there's something better than what we have planned, or something took off that you weren't anticipating, of course we can go with that. But there's not, at that point, there's no real discussion for it. Everybody knows what's coming up next, and everybody knows what we're doing. There's, you know, there's not a lot of downtime. There's not a lot of downtime. And, but there is something to be said about that, because radio people are shitty actors. You know, to recreate a moment is a lot more difficult than just letting something play out in real time.
I agree. And it's funny, the ones that are shitty actors as well do the fake segments. Nothing makes me happier, Woody, than when I'm on Tinder or Bumble and I'm talking to a girl and they find out that I'm doing radio or whatever, or that I work in radio, and they'll say, oh, do you do War of the Roses or Second Date Update on your show or at your job? And my favorite hobby, Woody, is saying to them, no, that's fake. And they're like, what? I've been listening to War of the Roses for 15 years. That's fake. It's the funniest thing, bro.
Yeah, and you know, it's crazy. I kind of think it's like, kind of feels like wrestling in a way. It's one of those things where, doesn't matter. People still find entertainment in it, like, or some of the reality shows. What's real? What's completely fabricated? What's whatever? I mean, look, it is a show. I just don't think it's, I think it's disingenuous to be a show, or to be a personality who says that you're authentic and, you know, you tell things like it is and whatever, and then do stuff like that. Like, that doesn't, I don't know. That's just, like I said, disingenuous.
And
But if you're someone, and you know what, we'll go back to Mancal. Mancal, as big of a dick as he is, was great at creating this kind of like under the big top type circus of stuff. I've heard him tell the most ridiculous stories. I was driving to work this morning and I was behind a car and they threw a bag of puppies out the window. Like, bag of puppies out the window. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like he would just come up, like one of the people on the show was having a heart attack. He had a guy on the show. I can't imagine. Oh my God. Today, if you did this, he had a guy on the show. His name is Ryan, who he called Ryan, his on air character. It was Ryan, the gay Mexican. He's not gay and he's not Mexican. And one of the storylines that they came up with for the show, again, completely fake and, you know, whatever, is that Ryan had to come out on the air, crying, telling everybody that he had AIDS.
Whoa.
You know? Yeah. And I know the guy now Ryan is producing the LNK morning show on coast here in Los Angeles, and still not gay, still not Mexican, and still doesn't have AIDS.
What's funny
that was Mancal's thing. That was his brand of like a Barnum and Bailey kind of, you know, ridiculousness and chaos. And, you know, Howard's got his thing. Every show has got their own thing. And for some shows, the prank calls and the second date updates, it's great. It works for them. It's not my thing, you know. And I think it's amazing how dumb, I mean, but just look around, how dumb the public is, you know. And also, what does that say about, we're dumb. Like, radio people are not smart people. We're C students at best, you know. It's high school with microphones. And, you know, everybody's just kind of doing their thing. And whatever you can find success in, or whatever ends up working for you, I don't necessarily care. It's just not the fake calls. That's just not my thing.
Looking back on it, overall, what did you think of the Opie and Anthony era?
I loved it. I mean, I went into it wanting to hate them because I was a Howard guy, and there were two different camps. It was like iPhone and Android, PlayStation and Xbox. You know, it's like there was a divide, you know, and especially at the time, because I was working at K-Rock in New York, where, you know, Howard was, and, you know, I knew Howard, like, not like friends with Howard, but like I'd see him in the hallways. He was always very nice to me, all that kind of stuff. So I was, and not to mention, I grew up idolizing Howard. So that was a clear choice for me. I was a Howard guy. Open Anthony were the guys over at NEW talking crap and trying to start, you know, fights and get their attention. And it worked for them, and they did great. And in the interest of, you know, just wanting to know, like, man, what is this all about? What is this hype all about? Like, I started tuning in, and I really fell in love with Jim Norton's character on the show. But when he and Anthony were going back and forth and riffing on something, it was super funny. It was definitely something that was fresh and different. It was just different than Howard. It wasn't Howard. It was different than Howard. Howard definitely has his own thing. And so I came to appreciate that show and became a big fan of that show. Just in my own building, I had to be silent about it because there was so much animosity between the two camps. I love that show. It's crazy to watch how Anthony's gone off the deep end,
dude.
But
it's,
you know,
frightening.
But when he was in his box and he was doing his thing as part of that show, and in that time, I thought it was really funny.
What do you think of all the hate that, like, Opie gets? I mean, he'll get like 20 tweets. If he tweets one tweet, 18 of the 20 tweets will be, "You suck. You ruined the show."
It's hard to know. I think just because, you know, I think, you know, Opie's doing his own thing. I think he's got his own, I'm not speaking for him. This is just my own. I'm just guessing. Like I think it's difficult. It's gotta be difficult when you were at a certain point and now you're doing, you know, something that is not, I don't want to say lesser, but it's just different. It's not as high profile. It's not the big stage that you want, that you once had. You know, and so I think that's got to be really difficult to deal with. And then when things go south between different people on the show and you engage it, I think you kind of brought it upon yourself in a weird way. And all of them did. Opie did. Anthony did. Norton did. You know, because they were so – they created such an atmosphere of brutality and ish-talking and ball-breaking and just – like, so that's just what you're going to get when you put that out. That's what you're going to get. Those are your fans. Your fans are going to be the most brutal, even if they love you. We see that a lot with us. Like, you know, we could talk smack or joke around and whatever, but, like, you know, you better believe, read the comment section of anything on social media. Like that's the audience you created. So that's who's there. These pests are there. And sometimes they're going to turn on you, you know, and maybe not even turn on you, but, like, somebody may say something just in jest or with sarcasm, and Opie responds to it in a certain way, and then that opens a whole another, you know, can of worms. You know, it's got to be a weird balance.
Well, yeah,
I don't love Opie. I spent a little bit of time with Opie, and he was a very nice guy, and I think he's been very humbled, and I think those guys all kind of have to realize, when they're getting in bed at night and they're laying down and ready to fall asleep, like, they know where they messed up. We all do. We all know where we've made mistakes. We would have, like, zigged where we should have zagged in our careers and whatever. And, you know, but here you are, and, you know, for good and for bad, that's how it is. And you're going to get those pests the same way they were pestering the crap out of everybody during Jocktober.
Oh my God.
Now it's like, man, you better keep the toe in the line too, or else you're going to get it right back. And you got to have a fix into it. And, you know, I think Opie knows that. And part of me also believes he's probably doing it partially for the entertainment value of it too. You know, the conflict of it.
Another example of someone reaping what they sow is your favorite Bubba the Love Sponge. That's one guy, man, that you reap what you sow, and his whole audience hates him now as well.
Yeah, I don't. You know what's funny? Like, I don't know anything about him these days. But yeah, no, it's like my last frame of reference on that guy was like 10 years ago. I have no idea what he's doing. No idea, you know, what he's, you know, show. Is he on stations?
He's
just online.
He's paying.
Don't care.
He's
and
brokered.
Don't care.
He's brokered.
Yeah, and don't care.
That's why you're the best, bro, is he's one of the guys that had a one-sided war with you. And I think you told me this. Didn't you and Rizzuto, like, he knew what you guys were going to talk about or something, and then you guys flipped the topics or whatever?
Yeah, when I was in St. Louis, they were launching a show. And this is one of those things, by the way, like, maybe this is who he really is. Maybe this is just, you know, what he was doing for his show, and he thought this is how, you know, because he was coming in on a little AM station, and meanwhile, you know, my show on a huge FM station, we had like over a 30 share. Like, we dominated.
Yeah.
And so he's coming in trying to make noise, going after us. And so he was basically saying that he knew what we were going to talk about that day. And so my producer at the time, he checked out the podcast because he had never even heard of this guy. And Rizzuto and I had both at least heard of him. And so he's like, oh, yeah, so here's what he's doing. And so he would go on the air each morning, apparently, and say, all right, this is what they're going to talk about today. They're going to talk about this, this, and this. It was based on one show prep service.
Yeah.
And Bubba was convinced that every show just reads this. And I'm sure some do. That's not how we did it. But, like, you know, of course we get show prep services and we see what's in there. But, like, we weren't – it wasn't, like, the go-to Bible each day. And so I'm like, dude, you know what's funny? Here's – I said – listen in the morning and just write down all the things that he says we're going to talk about and then just give me the list because he was going on the air, I think an hour or so before we were based on time zones.
Yeah.
So I would have a list of all the things that he said that we would talk about. And then I just didn't mention any of those things. And, we stayed away from those topics. We had 1,000 other things, you know, to talk about or to do or whatever. And, he'd be checking in with his producer and, we would play the audio of that because it was pretty funny. It's like, hey, they talk about this yet? No, not yet. It's like anything he brought up, like we really didn't talk about. So like I said, that was the kind of thing. If you're going to do like any kind of radio engagement war or whatever, that's the kind of stuff that I find more interesting. You know, it's like just these little things. We never mentioned him. We never talked about him. We just avoided those topics. And so like that was enough to drive him crazy. You know, and piss him off. I remember like when pretty early on, here in Los Angeles, you know, cause the station that I came on was the second alternative station and we were very far down the ratings compared to where K-Rock was. And K-Rock had all the relationships with all these bands at the time and stuff that, you know, as our station would never be able to do. And I remember they were saying, that, you know, they were going to have Weezer on the next day and they were going to world premiere their new song. So, and it wasn't going to be till like 8 o'clock in the morning. And so we went on the air like at 5 or 6 at the time, I forget when we were going. And the minute we went on the air, we started talking about it as if we've been playing the song since last night. Like, dude, how about that new Weezer? It's great, right? Oh yeah. It's really, it's called blah, 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 blah. We'll play it again later on this morning. So we kept just talking about how we've been playing it. We've been playing it. K-Rock went nuts going like, do they have a copy of the song? Were they playing it? They're looking at media base, trying to see if we play it. But like, on the air, we never even mentioned K-Rock or how Kevin and Bean were going to have them in. And they really were going to be the ones playing the song for the first time. But we went on the air and from a perception standpoint, just owned it. Oh, yeah, we've been playing it since last night. It's really good. We'll play it. I don't know. It's probably it'll be the third time we've played it this morning. And it's just total lie and just total, you know, but it, again, it was just because it created and now the person who was the music director at the time at K-Rock is now the program director at Alt. And she was like, oh, my God, that was such a fire drill because we're like, how did they get the song? How many times have they played it? We were supposed to blah, blah, blah. So it's just it's these little things that you can do to just like the mental warfare and or just to tease and have fun with it. I mean, is it the end of the world? No. But it was pretty fun when, you know, someone's really putting themselves out there about we're going to do this. And then you just kind of undercut them.
How does it feel that you guys are doing very well against K-Rock? Because I know the first few years was an uphill battle against Kevin and Bean, but it has to be a good feeling. Like, for example, my mom right now is out in Los Angeles, and she loves your show, and she's been checking it out. Like, it has to be a good feeling that you're doing very well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't pay attention to any particular station. I kind of feel like, you know, I want to beat everybody. I don't care what the format is. We're a content show. We're a content show that happens to be on an alternative station, not an alternative show on an alternative station. So K-Rock, while they are a competitor, they're as much of a competitor as any of our other stations, you know, KISS or the Spanish stations, which obviously do really well in Los Angeles. But we've been really lucky, you know, in just the the consistency where, you know, we came in and I think we were number 23 in the market when we started. And then Kevin and Bean were number one. And then eventually we became number one and they became number 15. And then we've been very lucky to be basically in that position for the last 6 or 7 years. And just like anything else, there are ups and there are downs, but the downs are not super down. And, you know, like right now we're number one persons 18 to 34, number one persons 25, 54, all the money demos in Los Angeles. And, you know, that's a good place to be. And so, you know, while it's not the 100 share that I would like, you know, it's, I don't, in fact, I don't, it's really funny. I don't really ask about, it's not funny. It's dumb. I hate when people say that. Oh, here's what's funny. It's not funny. I think it's more interesting. Like I used to very, very much care about whatever the ratings were on a particular week or a particular month or whatever. And until I hear about ratings, I don't know what they are. I just concentrate on, you know, what I can control. Cause I'm very much a person who wants to be able to control what I have the ability to control. And the things I don't have control over, I'm working very hard to not worry about it. If I can't control it, like you can't control meters, you can't control rating, you can't control the actual ratings. Radio is not a business where the person who studies the hardest gets the best grade. It just isn't. So all I can do is make sure that I know that we're having fun, that we're doing the best thing that we think the audience will enjoy in any particular day, any particular hour or segment. And as long as I'm consistent with that and keep everybody focused, and that's what I can do as my job as the host of the show and the leader of the show, to keep everybody focused. I feel like it's the idea of chasing success and the money will follow. Chase the good content, chase the consistency, and the ratings will follow. And that's more the approach now, because everybody bitches about the same stuff with ratings. You can't control the system. You can't control the methodology. So just control what you can control, and who gives a shit about the rest.
Have you ever spoken to Kevin or Bean?
Very briefly to Bean. I met those guys because I was like a part-timer at K-Rock for a couple of years when I was at Live 105 in San Francisco. I was being flown down on the weekends to fill in on the station, just kind of be around and get familiar. I think it was Weatherly's, you know, idea at one point that, you know, he was never quite sure when the Kevin and Bean thing was going to come to an end. And so he had told me at that time, he's like, I just want you around. I want you around the station. I want you to get familiar with the city. I don't think he anticipated that I'd be across the street. But, you know, Weatherly and I are still friends. I love that guy. And I got tremendous respect for K-Rock and, you know, for that station and for Kevin and Bean both. I understood why, and I tried to reach out more and, you know, connect with Bean, especially kind of the way that I've connected now with Mark Thompson from Mark and Brian. But I understand now, but at the time it's like he didn't really want anything to do with me. I think maybe he thought I was trying to, you know, mess with him or it was going to be some kind of bit. And it really wasn't. It was just admiration and respect for, you know, how long they were a dominant show in Los Angeles. And as a radio geek, I'd love the chance to get to know that guy more.
What do you think about the Radio Hall of Fame? Do you ever feel like you want to make it, or do you not care?
No, I think as a radio geek, I think it'd be really cool, but I don't think that's the place for me. And when I say that, I mean, I don't honestly believe that I'm in that category, you know? You know, yeah, we've been successful in L.A., but there's been a lot of people over the years who have been successful in New York or L.A. and a lot of different places. People have had way more impact than we have, you know, or than I have. I've been in a lot of places. I've been fired a bunch of times, and I guess a lot of people have too. But I don't, you know, I always say nobody hates me more than me, and probably that's why I deal with criticism and, you know, people talking shit or whatever. That kind of stuff just kind of rolls, because anything that anybody said about me, I've already said about myself, and I'm harder on our show than anybody else would ever be able to be, any consultant or program director or whatever. So, you know, I feel like I'm objective enough. I'm not sitting here going, man, we have a really great show. Every day I just feel like I'm trying to keep this thing on the rails and not get fired. And so the idea of like a Radio Hall of Fame or whatever, while that would be really cool, and I think that'd be, you know, a tremendous honor, like I just don't, that's as realistic as me, you know, running a marathon. You know, I don't think that's ever going to happen. I just don't think I'm the person for that.
Why are you so hard on yourself, Woody?
Because, you know, who isn't afraid of failure? I mean, I've failed plenty of times, but like every time I fail, it's like, well, I never want to do that again. It's like putting your hand on a hot stove. Like, man, who likes that feeling? You don't like that feeling. And so you're running, you're working your way away from that feeling. It's the reason I started, you know, saving and investing money the way I have for so many years. Like, because after getting fired the first couple times in radio, it's like you realize how shifty it is, you know? And so I figure every dollar that I put away is another dollar less dependent I am on some program director or some, you know, general manager getting a hair up their ass and firing me and me needing to care about it. So, you know, that's what drives me. It's just, it's not anything else other than I love what I do. I love radio. I love the medium of it. I love the process of it. I love the strategy of it. And I don't want to fail at it. You know, I don't want to disappoint myself. I don't want to disappoint, you know, the people who are paying me. And so, you know, I want to keep my only goal in my professional life has been to be full time on the radio and be able to have radio be my only job, where I didn't need to have a side job or whatever. I would just be able to do this. Everything that's happened since then has just been, it's been the cherry on the sundae. It's been gravy, you know?
Now, also, for people that haven't seen Woody's show, why should they check it out?
Check it out or don't. I don't, you know, there's a lot of content out there. I've been lucky enough that I have a show where I literally got to hire whoever I wanted. It's been pieced together over the years, starting with, you know, people I've known since I was 17 to people who I just met a couple of years ago. And there's a lot of diverse, and I'm not using diverse in the politically correct way. I'm using diverse in a way of say there's a difference of opinion in the room that no matter what we're doing or talking about, you know, it could be a more serious conversation about, you know, whatever the big story is in the news. We don't really get into politics too much at all because there's no win there. But at the same time, we're, you know, doing a bit where somebody wanted to know if they'd be able to relieve themselves if they had an adult diaper on, would their body allow them to do it? And so we had an adult diaper day where, you know, everybody tried to see if they'd be able to pee in an adult diaper. So it goes anywhere from, you know, highbrow to, you know, not even bottom of the barrel. We're talking like under the barrel, you know? So it's just a little bit of everything in between. Fortunate enough to have a really big staff of people that work on the show. And so there's never a lack of ideas or things that we're willing to try. And, you know, and we don't do War of the Roses.
No, you do not. Can you believe we've been talking for 45 minutes?
Yes.
You can.
I can. Well, the only reason is because like I will hang up this phone call and I'll go, oh God, shut the fuck up. You talk too much. Not you. Meaning I talk too much. So I'm sorry.
Could you do me one favor?
Yeah.
Could you retweet this interview for me?
Sure.
Because whenever I have radio hosts on that don't retweet it, it drives me nuts. There's a certain morning guy in LA that didn't do that, and I was like, come on, really? It's very annoying.
In LA?
Yeah, rhymes with Schmevin Schmein.
Oh, you had him on?
Yeah, he was talking down to me, too. He was trying to be a hard ass. I was like, all right, why did I do this?
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Hey, amen. Like I said, everybody's got their thing. If you ask me to do it, I'll tell you I'll do it. I'll do it.
Well, Woody, I just had to bring that up because I thought that would be funny. Woody, it's been a lot of fun having you on Happy Hour. Keep up the good work, bro.
Thanks, man.
Happy Hour. Happy Hour.